Mr. Boyne, Reel 7. Now, we've come up to now, we'll get into Operation Epsom, which is the attack on Shur on the 26th of June 1944. Now, before we go on, you've just mentioned quite right, importantly, that you were the wireless operator on this one, not the gunner. So you're a wireless operator loader in the Firefly. Just a bit about that. You haven't mentioned much about wireless operating. Had you had much training in that?
Yeah.
When did you done that?
Well, that was done at Cashett and Barnard Castle. It's not in great depth, but it doesn't need to be really.
What was the wireless operator's role? What equipment did you have, and what were you doing?
Well, you had the 19 set, of course.
What was the 19 set? How did it work?
How did it work?
You would
set it up onto the frequencies that were given you, the signals officer could emit this signal on that frequency, and you'd tune into it, and you'd lock your frequency onto that with a sort of another spare frequency, you'd lock into that. We never used the B set, which was only had a range of a few yards. That was not a troop thing, really, the B sets out of it. It had a very small range, and it was really for, yes, just a troop. The troop commander could switch to that, and you could talk close range.
And
but to my knowledge, I don't ever remember anybody using
it. So the troop commander would use the other one?
He could use it, but I don't ever remember them using it.
How would they communicate with you then, the troop commander? Or was it
on the normal radio then.
Yeah, they'd use the normal, that's what I mean.
The normal frequency, yeah.
So they wouldn't use the special one, they'd just use the main one.
Yeah, for some reason, the little one was always there, but I don't remember anybody ever using it.
And what about the internal communications in the tank? Because you were all wearing
headsets. You had a headset, yes, and a mic. And you could switch from intercom to the main radio. You had to switch for that. And often, if you didn't switch over to the main, or you were on the main and somebody came up with a headset, it would go out for all, as it were. You used to get some little funny stuff coming out over the air, inadvertently, of course. But I'd say, by the suffering, I used to swap with a gunner and we used to sort of take the turns, really.
And this was your turn. Now, when a message came through, you'd tell a tank commander, so you'd tell Corporal Bush.
Yeah, the chances are he'd be listening anyway, through his headset. What you got, it comes through his as well.
So all you did that was different was tune it in. Your job was tuning it in, set it up, tune it in, and then you'd load.
That's right. Yeah. But if he didn't have his headset, if it was off his ears, as sometimes they did, and the message came through, then you sort of get in touch and give him a dig and point to the switch, and then he put his set on and answer. You could tell him then on the intercom. You could tell him within yourself on the intercom that there was a message coming through, comes through from the whatever, and he would then respond on that way.
Now, was there a volume control on the intercom? Because I've heard complaints that it was a bit loud at times with people shouting.
Is that not a problem to you? There was a problem with people shouting in the excitement, of course. You'd wince with it when somebody did holler, but they usually holler for a reason.
So you were the wireless operator now, what do you remember of the first day when they moved forward towards Shur for the first time? Because B Squadron were in front at first.
Yes.
And then C and A, that was yours, A Squadron, took over. Now, what do you remember as you moved forward, rumbled forward?
You had a start line that you moved up to. And that was always... You were always at their first light, ready, and moved off onto the start.
Now, what was the start line in effect? I mean,
in effect, it was a couple of Jeeps, and that was it. You move up to a point when and somebody would give you the go, you know, you move forward from that. But it was always called the start line. I mean, in fact, it never was a physical line. It was just a point, as it were.
Now, what formation would you move off in your troop?
Well,
were there three or four that day?
I would say there was four. Usually the sergeant would lead.
I thought you had Lieutenant Hall.
He would then dictate or say who was leading.
So I get what you mean. The sergeant's tank would be first.
If the officer wanted the sergeant in front, that's on the day or the time, it would be the squad. The troop will go sergeant, myself, corporal, whatever. He would then dictate it. And he'd swap people about. You'd be up front one time, and one of the other.
And what formation would you be in?
Well, it depended on what you were going. If you were going up the track, then you'd be one behind the other.
Do you remember what it was on the attack on Shur, the first one?
Yeah, as I said,
that's all right. No, I know it's not too.
You were moving up, and then it seemed that all the bands all went. It all started guns firing, targets popping up. And then you were, as a loader on that occasion, you were occupied just loading.
Could you see anything as while operator loader?
Not a lot. You've only got your parachute. On the Firefly, you had your own hatch. You had your own hatch because you couldn't, unlike the 75, the operator, the wireless operator, could get under the gun to get out. But on the Firefly, being bigger, you had to cut an extra hatch overhead. Alongside the commander's hatch, so you did have your own hatch. But to see anything, you either look through the periscope that was sighted in front of you, or you put your head up.
And did you have yours open that day? And what could you see as you went forward at first?
What could you see? Smoke, movement of stuff around you, a lot of dust. It seemed to be a lot of dust. I'm not sure. It was like mayhem, really. All just coming over the air for this, that, and everything else. A lot of firing at what I wouldn't know, wouldn't see. It was only when through the gunner's sight that you would actually visually see something, a target, as it were.
You couldn't. The gunner could, but you couldn't.
You couldn't. So you were busy. Once you started firing, as you had the ammunition all around the turret room, they'd be calling for HE, as it were. Then when it wasn't firing, then you busied yourself to get filling the empty spaces near to you. You wanted everything as near to you as you could lay your hands on.
So the ones you'd fire would be the ones immediately near you, and then you'd scuttle around the rest of the turret and bring them back around.
Yeah,
how many would you have in that turret, roughly?
30.
So you could only fire 30 shots. Or were there any?
Yeah, that was a bit stone all over elsewhere. Odd bits that you tacked. Here, you know, stuff in. But the actual shells, I wouldn't think about 30 of them. I could be wrong. But as soon as you fired them, then you'd fill the holes in so that you were only working near yourself.
So what was the actual sequence of orders in action then? For you, I mean.
It would be low with HE. Then
that would be the order.
That would
come out. And that would come from?
Commander.
Bush.
Yeah. So if they were firing at something that was camouflaged, and you didn't know what was behind it. It might, if it was an 88, for instance, it would be camouflage. If that's what you thought it might be, I think the name of the game was to fire an 80 to blow some of the camouflage away, expose it. Yeah, and then if you exposed it and found it wasn't really to your liking, you know, it was armour piercing if it was that apparent or whatever. So HE had some purpose to, because the Germans were very good at camouflaging, they really were good, almost down to an art form with some of them. So you, to blow it away, or if it was infantry in the woods, you'd use HE as airburst. You'd fire that into the trees to rain down on whoever's underneath it. So you did fire a fair bit of HE on those, for those reasons. But once you fired them and exposed the target, then it was armor piercing. But as you use the round, you move them from places further away so that they were at hand.
And what was the actual mechanism? You've done it briefly before, but how did you load? So you told HE, what would you do? Did you have to adjust anything on the shell?
No, the breech, you opened the breech and just...
Was it a simple breech mechanism?
An arm that you moved over, and the firefly, the breech, moved from the gunner side to you. You had to punch the shell in because... As the shell went in, it hit two little fingers that tripped the breech to shut. So you didn't want your fingers in the way of that when that shut. The breech was quite a sizable chunk. So you patched it and with your arm moving it away from the breech. The breech snapped shut and that was it. The firing pin was automatically triggered, primed at that point.
And the gunner would fire it with his trigger, or was it a button?
That's right, pulled the trigger.
And how long would that action take? I mean, what was your rate of fire? I mean, did it take 10 seconds, 20 seconds, a minute?
If the target, if you fired at a target, as soon as it fired, the shell was ejected.
Would that come back past you?
It would come back, hit a deflecting plate behind it, which was in front of the 19 set, and then drop. At that point, it would be armour piercing again. You'd have one of each virtually ready to pick up. And if it was armour piercing, bang that one went in, and that one could go off in a matter of once a breech shut, it could fire immediately.
It sounds like it's only a matter of seconds.
Yeah, but you could actually. You get a rhythm going, you know, then when it was a lull, that's when you shuffle stuff about to get it out of your feet. In between time, you might be firing a machine gun, which is right in front of you. Then you'd have to stick another belt in that when it got down low.
Wouldn't the gunner do the machine gun?
He'd do that, firing that. He'd be firing that, but he relied on you to reload it. So again, you had boxes of the ammunition. You'd have always have them at your feet ready, just to stick to the belt. You just have to flip them up the top cover, line it in, and then cocking it.
Now you were advancing towards Sher. Just a couple of things that you might remember on that first day. That apparently there were some Crusaders had gone before you, and there were quite a few of them. Lying around, not too well. Did you remember seeing that?
Good. There were vehicles about damaged, tracks off. Some looked in a fairly bad state, I guess, because the Crusaders couldn't stand too much battling.
Were they Crusaders, most of them?
I think they were the British-type tank, yeah. A lot of there were other vehicles about. But it's just a messy sort of. They were in the ditches and up the banks of the field, you know, stuck in a hedge.
Now that day, C got a hammering and A lost two tanks. Did you see any of your own
crew
tanks go up?
No. The Firefly, you were moving to targets that was often spotted by the others. They would, and that's what used to happen basically, that they, because their gun wasn't that effective on that range, they would select the targets for you most of the time, so you were then moving into their for their targets.
So yeah, that would come through on the radio?
Yeah, yes, it would.
That you were to go to such a place?
Targets also.
Do you remember anything in particular? I know you've got an extremely limited perspective from wireless operator, so, you know, anything you remember on that day that you could see or...
No, just a real... not messy, but it all bubbled up and it sort of all exploded around you, if you're not metaphorically, but all the chatter over the radio and then you had these sort of moments of firing about machine guns going, patterns, and then of course there was the German the shells like naval burfers and stuff coming over, big heaps of those. You could actually see those in the air when they were fired.
Did you have any close landing near you?
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't a Nebelwerfer shell, it wouldn't do much damage, would it, to a Sherman? Or would
No.
Firefly?
Unless it comes through the turret, that's where the hole in the top, I mean, then. But no. But you could see the cluster coming over. They were like little small dustbins in the air. I mean, but they were terrible for infantry. Because I think that was their main feature, really, for infantry.
Did you bump any Tiger, any other tanks, I mean German tanks or 88s?
We certainly scored some hits, but to me it was out in the wilderness. I mean, you know,
and what about return fire?
There was obviously firing towards us, All you saw were flashes in the distance, and up on the radio, somebody would actually pinpoint what it was and where it was. Then your fire would be directed at that point.
But you didn't have any terribly close escapes.
No, presumably. No. When you got out, you'd see scars where shrapnel would take a chip out the side or something like that. But nothing major. Really. If anybody did fire us, they obviously missed. I wouldn't have known. You know.
So for you, that just to summary up, the action was a confused. You were firing. You were busy, and you were firing, and you were rumbling about all over the place. People were firing at you, but you weren't particularly aware when. And you didn't know. You didn't see any of your own casualties.
No.
And you weren't.
No, I don't think so.
From your. And then it presumably stopped.
You get these peaks and troughs. Everybody sort of catches their breath. And again, when you start shooting yourselves out, so they get rid of the empty shell cases and that are rolling out of your feet. And, try and think. When there's a load, you try and have a brew up, you know, have a cup of tea or something, which the times you used to sort of get stuff out, we get three quarters through it.
Even on them early days, would you still brew up in lulls? Or would that be later when you're more experienced?
Probably later.
I'll come back to that. So, now, the attack on Sher didn't succeed that day, and they pulled back to Lager. Is that how you remember it?
Yeah, going back.
Nothing.
You always move back to a Lager, which was the point that you passed through, as it were.
Now, there's nothing else you remember about the fighting that day.
Not particularly. No.
What about the Lager? Could you just explain, I think it's fairly obvious, but why did they pull back to Lager? I mean, the infantry didn't pull back. I mean, just tell us why.
Well, you pulled back to Lager to refuel with ammo, petrol, water, whatever, and rations. But you formed up his squadrons in the four lines, A, B, C, and C, whatever.
Were there in any... Sorry.
The gap between A and B. So when the trucks came up, they drove up the lane between A and B. As they went past, you tell them what you wanted. So much HE, so much armour piercing and the like. That would be unloaded off the back in a heap, as it were, alongside you. And that would go for the machine gun ammunition as well. You then have to manhandle that into the turret, and you'd stow that. The petrol, you'd be told how much, get cans you wanted, petrol wise. That would be uploaded, manhandled up to the top, and then refilled from the, because the fillers were on the back engine covers, just behind the turret. Two fillers, if I remember, one each side. You fill those up, that would all be manhandled. We had jerry cans then, fortunately. The water bowser would come up, and you'd have a water can. You'd fill that, it would be filled from the bowser. So that was the main thing, petrol oil.
And you'd do this immediately they arrived? I mean,
as soon as I arrived, oh yeah.
You wouldn't wait for morning?
No. I think it was it must have been about the first time there, when we formed up, I've got a feeling that the first message that we got was that it was going to be something like 3 hours late. There'd be a lull of X number of hours. I think it was three. And this must have been... Because we didn't fall back to Lager till it was semi-dark, in June, of course, the semi-darkness is, I don't know, about 10 o'clock at night. So you pulled back, waited for him, and then to be told it was a sort of 3 hour wait. What do you do with yourself? You know, I mean, that's when you'd have a grow up and something to eat, because that's what you can do. But you would be. You could see that the lines weren't equal, who'd lost vehicles, because there would be a gap at the end when you formed up. So very quickly you could see which squadron had lost two, whatever, three. It showed up when you stood on the turret and looked out and had an overview of the regiment while you were waiting for Lager.
And what about casualties? I mean, any of the casualties? I mean, you'd had a fair number that day. Including two from your squad. I mean, did you lose any friends that day?
That day, I don't think I did. No. The general chat, as you walked down the line, would be, did anybody see it, where it was or who it was? Did they all get out? That was the main question from any of the crew.
Were people starting to realise after that day's fighting that Sherman's caught fire? I mean, or was it still not?
I don't think it was really too apparent at that point, to be fair. I don't think it sunk in fully. You realise they were vulnerable, perhaps, but I don't think the main firing problem that we had was imminent then.
And then, would you set up your bivouac and just...
Yeah, you'd have that.
Would someone be on guard?
Yes. You had a guard duty, and all this was in those few hours of darkness. You had a guard duty, and the wireless operator also had wireless watch. You had to do a stint on that. So that would be organised on your behalf, as it were. You were told, well, you're on from 10 to 12 or 2 to 4 on wireless watch or the guard.
So what would taking the guard first, what would the guard do overnight?
Just prowl up and down and around the lager.
Would there be one per each squadron or troop or what?
The guard really would be made up from the regiment. But you really only seem to patrol up and down the lanes nearest you, I guess. So effectively you were in your own squadron.
And how were you armed? You'd be armed, because it. Was the Sten, and that would be from.
That wasn't an issue, actually. I don't think the Sten, but you picked them up fairly quickly. But we were armed with pistols, and I mean that's useless to throw bricks, really, if you were in that situation.
So it was Sten, which you'd pick up.
We'd have, yeah.
And bits. And what about the? I mean, that would surely give you very little chance to sleep if you're doing all this. Yeah. If you're on guard duty as well, that's just bad luck, is it?
It is, yes. Yes, it was. If it had to be done, it was your turn tonight, even beyond the night. Sleep didn't take me that time.
Now, what about this wireless watch? What was that exactly?
That's exactly what it name implies. The wireless was actually dead. And there was wireless silence, basically, doing all that. But you still had to sit with the set on. I think they used to do an hour, but you sat with the set on in case the message came through. You always had an officer that was to be contacted if a message came through. He was like the orderly officer of the day. So when he went on, it would be Lieutenant so-and-so. And if a message came over through that quiet time, he was the one you went and you knew his baby and where he'd be. He was the one you went and gave a match to. But it was all you got through the headphones was like the crackling of the thing being on. I don't ever recall a message coming over. It was just no silence. That's the time you don't do letters or something like that. It was quiet, nothing to do.
Well, let's talk about letters. Well, I mean, it's a bit early, but we'll still do it. Were letters and parcels from home, well, letters first, were they important to you? I mean, writing them and receiving them?
Receiving them, yeah, more than writing them, I guess. It was your link, wasn't it? A link pin, really. To know that everything was fine back home and the rest,
Who did you exchange letters with?
Obviously, my mum used to write fairly regularly, and then my girlfriend. At the time, my Joyce would write daily, and you'd get them in batches because they couldn't supply them every day. But yeah, first of all, she used to write reams.
And would you write back reams, or what was it?
No, very sparse.
Would you write every day, or would you just?
No, you couldn't.
What could you say? I mean.
What could you say?
I mean, were you aware that you were censored?
We were told we were, but what could you write about? Not really much. It wasn't what was written, it was what wasn't written. You were still writing, as it were, I guess.
It meant you were still there.
Yeah, I think that would be the ultimate for it, to show that you were still going, yeah.
And what about parcels from home? Did you get any?
Yeah, objects used to come through, yes. Your cake, and I don't know how they made it, that's for sure. And it used to arrive in a pretty tatty old form, but bashed about. And knitting gloves and scarves and things you could turn up. Your socks and bits and bobs. Yeah, little odd bits. Always thankful that the old post used to come up. That used to come up when you were in Lava, of course. I always look forward to the letters, yeah, I must admit.